Welcome. This is your host, Susan Rinsberger, energy expert, communicator, and interpreter for star beings. And you're listening to Voices from the Stars. Hi, everyone. Thank you for joining us. All right, star beings, thank you for taking over and stepping in and stepping up. I'm back at home in my house in the Uco Valley of Mendoza province in Argentina, which is a desert atmosphere environment, though you would not know it by the weather. The last couple of days have been rainy and cold. We've had a rainy, cold summer in Argentina. But I am home again from a trip to Cordoba province, which is more in the center, east and west of the country, almost directly east of here, a little north. And there I was checking out an energy spot, an area of high frequency energy where the star beings had asked me to come work with them near Mount Uritorco, or Cerro Uritorco, as it's called in Spanish. And the surrounding area, all of it's very high frequency, and there are lots of sightings of UFOs and lots of phenomena, and many people drawn there because of it, who are tuning into that energy. Also lots of alternative healing therapies available. So it's an interesting place, and parts of it are very beautiful, and it's quite varied culturally. So I enjoyed that. And I expect I'll be doing much more recording from that area. But right now, I'm back here, and I want to continue a discussion, because the star beings have been saying they want to continue the discussion that we started last week about decision making. A question was sent to me by a friend asking, what is the difference between thinking through a decision and using your imagination to try to feel how you would feel if you make one decision or the other? For anybody who hasn't listened to the last episode, or not recently, has forgotten, the technique that the star beings, who called themselves the choosers, were teaching was to imagine yourself going down one path. I'm using the metaphor of roads, okay? So not visualizing yourself on a road, literally, but imagining yourself in one situation, the way you would like one path to end up, or where you would like it to lead you. That's a better way to put it. Imagine yourself making one decision and being in the situation you would like that decision to lead to, that you're already in the result. And just use your ability to visualize and to feel, and then feel how your emotions respond to that. And then do the same with the other possible choice. And they call these choices, not decisions. Decision sounds very serious. And they said, remember, it's just a choice, and you can always make another choice. If you don't like the result or the experience, you are going to make other choices. Not only can you, but you are. You make choices every day. So don't allow yourself to be intimidated by having to make a choice that you deem to be much more important than all the others. I'm now just kind of translating for them. So then the question arose, what is the difference then? You're going into your mind to use your imagination to imagine yourself in one situation, one possible outcome and the other, and then comparing how you feel in each of those situations. That's all done with your mind. So what's the difference between that and trying to think your way through the decision? So we're going to ask the star beings to come in now, give us a little attunement so we're aligned with them and we can receive their wisdom at every level, not just through our intellect, but through our energetic body, which is what happens when you hear the light language. And then we'll let them answer that. I said they're kind of lifting off the helmet of resistance that we, most of us, carry most of the time on our, around our heads. It's an energetic, kind of heart-like, energetic helmet, really. that keeps us from seeing or knowing too much, perhaps, or more than we're sure we're ready for, or more than we've allowed ourselves to, would be a better way to put it. And now they're working on the third eye, and the throat, kind of going down through the chakra system. Clearing the flow. They said they're opening the flow of energy. You could all take a deep breath and blow it out. Do that a couple times. And that helps the flow. Just helps allow the flow through your body. Now we have a much more abundant, clear flow. And I see them sending rays of golden light out from where they are in a higher dimension, all through and around the earth, through these words, through their words and energy frequencies that they're sending to people everywhere that they listen to this podcast and whenever. That's the beauty of no time and space. It allows us to serve all of humanity at once, they say. Let those who have ears to hear, hear. Let those who desire to listen, listen. All right, wonderful. Okay, so I'm speaking with star beings who are the group that started speaking with us last week when we were in front of Urutarko, were members of the general conglomerate around there that have introduced themselves to me as the Principles of Light. They come from many star systems throughout the galaxy and the Andromeda galaxy at least. A few others, they said, but very few. Most of them come from much closer to the Earth. Those of us most affected by the energy frequencies dominant upon this planet are the ones who have come to help raise those frequencies. I suppose that's true. It's kind of like getting your automobile inspected to see if it's polluting too much. And then getting it fixed so it doesn't. These are the energetic mechanics, I guess we could say, except there are a lot more than that. All right, so the question about the difference between using your imagination to feel your way, imagine your way, visualize your way into the result of a decision or a choice, choice A and choice B, and just thinking about it. What is the difference? So the imagination is much more powerful than the intellect. The intellect is the analyzer, the computer part of the brain that you use to tick off boxes, to make lists, to contrast and compare. Through thought. The analyzer or the intellect uses thought. And thought, from the human perspective, has its limitations because it's generated by an aspect, a mind, that only knows itself as physical, that only knows its world as its physical, visible, or measurable elements. Science has extended the ability of the mind to understand its world through being able to measure what was previously not visible or audible or detectable, you could say, what was invisible and undetectable. However, that's a far cry from using all the information available to the universal mind or the source that exists beyond space and time, beyond the human existence. Now, you have access to that higher mind. But it does not arrive to you. Its information and inspiration does not arrive to you through the intellect. It arrives to you through another aspect of your mind that uses the right brain to sense, to receive information. The left brain then processes that. The thinker processes, but the receiver receives. So what part of the brain does the imagination use? Now this is risky because I don't know. Tell me about how the imagination works. I mean, maybe it's the two sides working together, but how does it work differently than the analyzer? Your imagination uses your non-physical senses. Your ability to see with your inner eye. What is your imagination? It's your inner eye, your inner ears, your inner ability to sense physically, tactily, what is not present physically. You use this so often that you're totally unconscious most of the time that you're using it. A memory, what is a memory? Memory can be based on thought, can be expressed through thought. But the memory of an experience itself is not a thought about that experience. It is feeling the way you felt in that experience, emotionally, physically, smelling, tasting, seeing, and hearing what you experienced. When you fully enter a memory, you're not thinking about the experience, you're re-experiencing it. And your body, as most of you already know now, your body interprets what you are experiencing with your inner senses as the same as an outer experience. Your body responds the same. This is why you can use that ability to also imagine yourself in a future situation and see how your body feels. Okay, so what's the connection between the body and the emotions? Because what we want to know is, are we going to be happy in that situation? Are we going to feel joy? Are we going to feel freedom, excitement, I don't know, many positive emotions, emotions we enjoy, so we call them positive. All right, now they just cleared all the thoughts out of my mind. What was I asking about? Emotion. Emotion is your body's response to a perception. Emotions arise based on a thought about an experience or a tactile visual or auditory experience itself, or taste or smell, I'm sure. Correct. Using your senses. When you're in a sensory experience, you have emotions about that experience. That's your body processing the experience. If you think about an experience, your body creates emotions in response to those thoughts. Okay, so why is it that we are to use our inner senses and visualize and try to imagine ourselves as much, as clearly as possible in a certain situation, in the resulting situation of a decision, rather than just thinking about it and seeing how we feel about the thoughts? Thoughts get confusing. Thoughts get confused. Because you don't know which thought to give more importance to. That's when you're trying to make a hard decision, it's hard for you because you're not sure which to value more. What you call your pros and cons, each choice has a certain attributes, you could say, or anticipated results that would be positive in their own way. That's why it's even a possible choice. If it were clear, you wouldn't be dithering over it or agonizing over it. So what you're trying to do is find the most positive of two possibly positive, or avoiding the most painful of two possibly painful decisions. Either way, when you think about it, your mind proposes one idea and then it proposes another, and it goes back and forth, and it can always think of an infinite number of possibilities, fears, possible outcomes, because thinking those thoughts is its job. When you stop the thought process and instead lower your attention to your heart, put your attention down on your heart, this helps calm the mind, tranquilize the mind. Just feel love for yourself or someone else if you can do that. When you put your attention on your heart, you can picture it opening and light coming through if that works for you. You can place yourself, your inner child there. You can place anyone else there that you love. You can place the source itself there if you want. Whatever ignites love in your heart. That is the best way to stop your mental activity or slow it down. And then what you do is use your imagination, which is not the analyzer, but simply the inner senses to create. Use your inner senses to create the image, the sound, the feeling. Use every sense you can as clearly as you can. And what are we supposed to imagine? The beginning of the process or some ultimate outcome? What would be your desired outcome for each choice? Clearly, you must have something in mind that you want. That's why you're considering it, making a choice, making a change. Choices are often about change, and those are the ones that are most frightening to human beings. So let's say you're considering a change in your life. What would be your hope? What would be your hoped for result? That's the best way to put that. What would be your hoped for result? What result are you hoping for from each option? That's what you want to visualize. Okay, suppose I did get that job and I did make X dollars or whatever your currency is per year. And suppose I did find that house or that perfect partner or whatever. Or suppose instead of choosing the partner, I chose to leave for the job. There are many, many, many infinite situations you could set up for yourself, and you have set up for yourself. You get yourself in these situations and then you don't know which to go and it scares you. And then fear closes down your energy field. This is the thing that is most important always to remember. Fear, great, fear is your worst enemy. That, I don't know, that doesn't seem very comforting. It's like, because the idea of having an enemy causes more fear. What we mean to say is, fear will not help you out of the situation. You've created the fear by convincing yourself that only one option is doable or one is far preferable to the other. And you're afraid of making the wrong choice. If you weren't afraid of making the wrong choice, you wouldn't even be asking about how to make it. You'd just automatically make it. Yeah, that's true. So you use your imagination and then you see. Once you've imagined yourself in the hoped for outcome, then see how you feel emotionally. With what emotions does your body respond to being in that situation? This is a very long explanation for how to do a simple exercise. Just picture yourself there. Picture it using all your inner physical senses and then picture how you feel emotionally. Observe how you feel emotionally. Don't try to make the body feel one thing or another. Don't assume that you know how you would feel in that situation. Explore. You are great explorers. You are explorers of the physical world as non-physical beings. It's all a great and brave adventure that you have undertaken. And you've undertaken it voluntarily. And we salute you for it, because we know that sometimes it's frightening. From your vantage point, it's easy to not see the truth, to lose your way, or to feel that you've lost your way, even though you haven't. Thank you. All right, so, star beings, I also wanted to ask you about obligation. The sense of obligation, because This arose in the context of thinking about decision-making. The question came up, what if you're just trying to even make a small decision, a daily decision about how to use your time, whether to do task A or task B, whether to do something you enjoy or to finish something you feel obligated to do. What role, what is obligation? Is it real? Is it something we've just created for ourselves? And I think that's very important to know, because so often that's part of what makes the decision difficult for us. We feel obligated to do one thing, but maybe we feel that we would enjoy something else. Tell us how to look at obligation, what it is, what to do about it, whether it's real. We think that is an excellent question. A big subject, actually, but we will try to be brief. So what is obligation? Obligation is a thought system that human beings have created surrounding the idea of an activity. It's not the idea of doing the activity itself, it's a belief about what it means to do that activity. One has promised. Very often that is what creates an obligation. One has promised. One has chosen a responsibility, whether it's having children or accepting a role in an organization, a job, or a relationship. All of these are things we take on voluntarily. We, meaning beings who enter their human form. Even in the higher dimensions, we take on certain roles and responsibilities voluntarily. We are here to help humanity, and it is a big responsibility, and we feel it. So do you feel obligated then? Obligation is not the same as responsibility. Oh, well, what's the difference? Obligation is when you feel that a responsibility is heavy, when it's a burden. A responsibility can be light and easy. You are also responsible for yourself, for meeting your own needs. Remember that. Your needs are the needs of your inner child. Your needs are the needs of your higher self while in human form. They are sacred. They are as sacred a responsibility as any other you take on in human life. Do not think that your needs are not valuable, necessary to fulfill, as important as your commitment to someone else. You are a sacred being. Each person is a sacred being. Each person has certain basic needs for love and kindness and compassion and growth and ease and play and fun, material sufficiency and prosperity and abundance even. Each one has their own comfort level at which they're happy to live, and the degree of material wealth that they feel necessary. And that's just fine. Some don't have that, others do. But always remember, no one else has been put in charge of taking care of you. When you were small, you had human help from your parents, we hope. Someone, somewhere along the line, helped you, even if they didn't do as good a job as you wanted them to do, you needed them to do, and they were supposed to do. They had promised to do implicitly by taking the responsibility of taking care of you. However, if they hadn't done anything at all, you probably would not have survived. If not your parents, somebody did something for you as a child that helped you survive childhood, even if your childhood was traumatic. But now, as adults, once you have passed that childhood threshold where you no longer need the physical, emotional, mental guidance and protection of others, you are then responsible for yourself. You are then responsible to seek your sustenance from within, your emotional sustenance, and use that inner connection to also support the arrival in your life, the appearance in your life of every material thing that you need. Sustenance, nourishment. You are responsible to sustain and nourish yourself. You have many people who help you depending on roles that you agree to take in each other's lives, you don't do it alone. You do it in coordination, cooperation with other human beings. It's a beautiful system of intersupport, support of one another, an interchange of support. That's what they're saying. It's a beautiful system of interchange of support. But at the most fundamental level, each being is self-sufficient, meaning responsible and enough. You are enough. Okay, so what's the difference between being self-sufficient, responsible for ourselves, and being obligated to take care of ourselves? The obligation comes from your mind. Your mind is a mental task maker. The less you trust yourself, the more rigid and demanding your mind becomes. It's constantly treating you as someone who's irresponsible, who might fail, someone who might fail to meet the responsibilities. And that is why it creates the feeling of obligation, the thought form of obligation around a responsibility. It's like that helmet we just took off your head. It's like they're showing me like a walnut. All I can think of is a Spanish word. Shell, a walnut shell. So the thought form is hard and rigid like a walnut shell around the responsibility itself. Is the responsibility an idea too? I mean, isn't it all just ideas? Where does responsibility originate then? Isn't it a thought as well? Yes, a responsibility is a thought about what is important to you to do in order to meet your needs or the needs of others that you choose voluntarily to assist. As we said, everyone is interdependent. There is a constant interchange of support taking place. So human beings generously choose to help others and ideally also choose to receive without guilt or feeling obligated to be not just self-sufficient, but isolated. You are not self-sufficient in isolation. The process of taking care of yourself and meeting your needs includes receiving help, seeking help where you need it, seeking support, interchanging support. So you enter into these situations, you choose this responsibility, you choose that. And if you choose so many responsibilities, you can't do them all, get yourself in a pickle, as you would say. Yes, I would say that. You get confused, you get overwhelmed, you feel obligated to do a certain, to fulfill a certain, you feel obligated to fulfill a certain responsibility, but you don't know how to fulfill all your responsibilities. If you get yourself in that situation, here's what we recommend. Think about your responsibilities that you're trying to balance, let's say, or complete, one by one. Release the idea that you are obligated. Know that responsibility doesn't have to be heavy. Responsibilities can be carried out bit by bit as the opportunity arises. When you let things flow, all the responsibilities are fulfilled naturally. When you don't block your energy flow with self-judgment, which is what obligation is, it's a way of using self-judgment to threaten you with pain if you don't complete a certain responsibility in a certain time frame or whatever the demand is. And sometimes those demands are needs of others. If you have children, there's a certain time frame when they need to eat, or they need to be washed, or they need to be put to bed. Those are real. But if you need more help, then you need to see what you can do to find it. You need to not be afraid that you won't fulfill your responsibilities, because you will. You are a naturally responsible being. So relax. Allow the energy to flow and allow yourself to fulfill your responsibilities. And if you find a conflict between fulfilling a responsibility and doing something else that you would like to do for yourself that you would enjoy but is not an actual responsibility, then what? Then what do we do? Sometimes what you're choosing when you choose the obligation is you're choosing not to feel the pain that you would feel if you judged yourself or feared that you would never finish that project. You're fearing the result of infinite procrastination. What we are suggesting that you do is release or dissolve the sense of obligation. To do that, you may need to visualize white light filling and surrounding it. If you're listening to this podcast, you've probably done some visualization before. Use whatever tool you have at your disposal to transmute that thought of obligation, that belief that you are obligated, and just know that you are a naturally responsible being and that the responsibilities that are most urgent and important will rise to the top and you will complete them all with time. Thank you. I think that's enough for today. That is lots to take in. So, I'm just going to thank the choosers, the star beings who have been with us today, teaching us about using our minds to make decisions and how to handle responsibility without feeling burdened by obligation. Thank you so much. Those are important topics. And thank every one of you who listens to this throughout time and space, wherever and whenever you are. We're delighted to speak to you. We're delighted to speak to you, they're saying. Little star being humor. Light as in with capital L. Like delight. And I'm delighted to be here. This is Susan Rensberger speaking to you from my home in the beautiful Uco Valley of Mendoza, Argentina, sending love and light and blessings to each of you. Until next time. Thank you for listening. To hear more from the star beings, plus interviews with other communicators, and tips for connecting with your own inner voice, please subscribe to this podcast. And if you appreciate the energy and information you've received, please review and rate this podcast. It's very important to us. And even more importantly, please share it with your friends. Thank you.